I'm at World of Learning with Caroline Waters, Director of People and Policy for the BT Group. Caroline's just delivered the keynote on day one, and I've managed to get 5 minutes of your time, which is absolutely fantastic. Thank you, Caroline. A couple of things. You were talking about different age groups in the workplace, and you know, there's quite a lot of myths around generations and how they learn. What's your approach to that?
Well, at BT, we're a long service company, so we'll actually have some people this year that hit 50 years service. So, as we're also a company that brings in apprentices every year, you can understand that we've already got at least four generations in our workforce. And actually, what we found is that each generation does bring a slightly different preference, but the core components of how people want to learn are the same. And actually, it has more to do what stage you are in life and what stage you're at in your development path than it does to do with which generation you're from. So for us, the real key for all of those different people is to give them choice and flexibility.
All right, okay.
What we know particularly is that depending on what your life stage is, you may want to access learning in a different way. For some people, that's going to mean an ability to use WYSI apps that they can use anytime, anywhere, to download learning material through technology, but also to learn in a learning community, either face-to-face or virtually. And actually, for lots of young people, learning in a virtual community is incredibly powerful because that's just how they run their lives.
Mm-hmm. So you talked about 20-year-olds having things in common with 40-year-olds and this kind of lifelong learning journey. So that how does that work? Just only because you did talk about it, and it's and I do think there are some, you can read a lot about the myths around the generation. So, you know, give us an example of how that works.
I mean, I think what we found is that there are lots of myths around generations. It's actually, you know, what we're in danger of doing is applying stereotypes.
Yeah.
You know, again, at BT, because we're a technology company, we have some people who are actually well over 60, now in their late 60s and 70s, who work for us just a few hours a week, because their expertise in new technology and developing new ways of using technology is so critical to our future. So we don't kind of say, okay, if you're younger, you'll have these characteristics. If you're older, we have those. What we know is that in each generation, we see innovation, creativity, solidity, ability to collaborate.
Yeah.
So that's really important. What we know is that, you know, and this is why I talked about it this morning, is life stage is incredible. So if you're a 20-year-old and you've just become a parent for the first time, actually your life experience and what you want is much more similar to a 40-year-old who's just become a parent for the first time than it is than either of you have got in common with other 20 or 40-year-olds. So, you know, age, to look at age, to look at generation, is too stereotypical. What we found is people, the way people want to learn, the way they want to engage, is determined by where they are in life and also how equipped they feel to learn.
Now, you talked about, we kind of asked the audience to think about the fact that people need learning in lots of different ways, or it needs to be delivered to them or given to them, or they need to find it at the right time in the right form. So what does that look like? Because does that mean, I mean, you mentioned WYSI apps earlier, does that mean that there's going to be a whole range, even more diverse sets of tools to help people learn?
There have to be diverse sets of tools. And in that toolbox, you'll see quite established ways of learning, classroom-based, face-to-face stuff, but maybe done in a different way, maybe done in collaborative learning sets. But you'll probably still bring people together. And then you'll also see people who, you know, are stimulated by an inquiry-based approach to learning. So give me a few light touch questions on an app that I can control and I can interact with when I'm ready to do it. So actually what we will see is learning academies, learning structures, creating these choices and a toolkit from which managers and, well, I think managers will become real coaches actually over time, and the individuals they work with to understand which works best for that individual at that time. The other great thing that I think we'll see is through the ability to help your people connect with their local community and bring their skills to the local community, I think you'll see an opportunity for businesses to help simulate learning environments so that, you know, I've got lots of people who are almost ready to be on the board. If I get those people a non-executive directorship where they can actually practice being in a board, they can understand what skills they bring, that simulated period of learning, all right, it adds great value to the board who receives them and that community. It's adding real development potential to that individual too. And I think that combination of the two coming together is the future.
Okay, I've got two more questions actually. So I only have one more, but I've added an extra one. Yeah, I did, didn't I? So what does this look like for the L&D team and an L&D, a typical L&D professional? What kind of things will they be doing to, you know, enable this kind of learning that you've outlined?
Well, I think they've got to rethink, actually, and that's quite scary. A lot of L&D in the past has been about transfer of knowledge. So that, you know, and that will continue to some degree. That's why we need this mix. Because, say, if you're a BT engineer and you're going to work in, down cable holes, the law says you've got to have a piece of paper that says you're trained to activate a gas inspection. That's not going to go away. What adds in is, if you think about the nature of the world that we're developing, the thing that happens to us, we have to learn to be discerning. We have to learn to love to learn, because every day there's new knowledge. Every day there's a new opportunity to apply that knowledge. How do we create a learning and development environment that teaches people how to do that, that develops them in that way so that they can understand relevance, they know what information to draw down, they know how to apply it, they know how to work across teams, because things are now so complex, nobody can understand it end to end, so you've got to be able to work collaboratively. That, I think, that and creating a learning environment, a natural way for people to learn almost without understanding that they're learning, that must be the future role of learning and development. I think that's a strategic change that we're not talking enough about.
Last question. What currently excites you the most about learning and L&D?
Everything we've just been talking about. I mean, you know, we live in a world where, and I mentioned this earlier, we as a humanity created more unique data in the last 12 months than we did in the 5,000 years before that. We are probably 10 years away from the creation of an affordable computer about $500 that will have greater computational power than the human race. Not a human mind, the human race. That means we're living in exponential times. What we really have to do though is we have to think about, how do we learn to be a society with all of that? How do we learn to be non-competitive and just do what's right for everyone? And that's what excites me, because that's the real potential for us going forward.
Caroline Waters, thanks very much.
You're very welcome.